following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Take a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another week of Inside Eagle Nation. Campus hustling and bustling with classes starting yesterday, so you're getting the usual traffic jam trying to get onto Fair Road, but at the end of the day, classes start, campus is full, and you're starting to get some kind of more normal.
And the next few days and weeks may tell us what we do or not do over the next few weeks and months.
Yeah, I think Frank put it pretty blatantly on Twitter of college campuses are starting to be full. These next couple of days and weeks are going to be what make or break what college football might look like. It's a matter of whether, and the crazy part is, and the thing that is probably the worst about it, is you could have your entire football program, athletic department doing everything right, and if somebody that comes in from Spokane, Washington, I don't know why I'm picking on Spokane, but first random town that I thought of.
Fair.
If somebody from Washington comes in and happens to be in a class with somebody and doesn't do the right thing, then you're kind of up the creek.
Kind of up the Eagle Creek.
There you go.
The whole wear your mask, social distance, wash your hands. We want to make sure we're doing it all the time, and we've stressed that more than enough on this. But now is the time where it does mean exactly what it was trying to mean whenever everybody was stressing it for a time like this. Now you've got to be able to do it. I wouldn't start doing it now because it might be too late. But if you've been doing it, and with the flood of students and everyone coming back, how bad do you want to play? Yeah. How badly do you want to play? Everything that you've worked for, everything that you've said you've worked for, and I know that we're probably not going to have September the 5th. I think that we can just about say that unless something falls from the sky. We might have to adjust our countdown.
We said wait 30 minutes and it might change.
The conference baseball tournament 3 years ago. We could adjust our countdown instead of bumping it back a week from 18 to 25 as I'm looking at it here in the studio. I just wonder if we don't move that up to 16. Because there is still one game that is slated to be played on September 3rd.
You and I were talking about it right as before we started recording this. Of on opening weekend of college football, would you say there were six games?
Six games total. Week zero, August 29th, that's all bye-bye. One game on the 3rd, it's South Alabama and Southern Miss. There are four games on that Saturday the 5th, two of those involving league schools. Arkansas State goes to play Memphis. Texas State hosts a really good SMU team that won 10 games last year. And then Monday night, you've got the Labor Day game between Navy and BYU. So I would think that if national television contracts get their way, there's going to be some teams represented on a bigger stage than what they're probably used to. But hey, in this situation, good for the G5 because that's where we are.
We'll get into some more of the good news that broke over the last week regarding Georgia Southern Athletics in just a moment. But as always, Inside Eagle Nation brought to you by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For most commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. Where you want to start? Football? Basketball? What you want first? I feel like Chris Draper saying that.
You did. The Draper, and you did come out right there. I think we should start with the thing that Eagle fans have been hoping would happen for about 6 years now.
Yeah.
News coming down right around a week ago. And for the first time ever, knock on wood, depending on what happens the next few months, Georgia Southern is going to play Army. How awesome does that sound?
And it's kind of cool. You had a couple of days before last week on Inside Eagle Nation, we talked about the Irk Russell Fund, and you had Jeff Munkin in that video announcing the Irk Russell Fund. Just a couple of hours later, about 24 hours later, yeah, is when everything started to come out that Georgia Southern would be heading to West Point.
And there's a number of reasons why this game did not happen before now, and who knows, it may not happen this year. We don't know where this is going to go. But the fact that Jared Benko was able to get something like this done between two fan bases, two football cultures that are naturally connected in so many ways, the coaching staffs, we could go on and on and on about that. But the idea that this conversation was started and something successful came out of it, at this point, no fans will be able to see the game because there's the statute from the state of New York put out by Governor Cuomo that no live sporting events or live events of any kind will have spectators. That is subject to change, though. That's something that came out back in the beginning of July. So maybe that'll change. Maybe we do get to go up there. Maybe we don't. But the fact that it could possibly happen is something that we could not say just a year ago. And I think that so many people have wanted this game just because of how well Coach Munkin has done since he left here after the 2013 season. And there's plenty of guys that are still at Georgia Southern that have worked with guys on that staff. It just seems like a perfect fit.
There's so many connections between Georgia Southern and Army, and a big part of that is when Coach Munkin left after the 2013 season, taking a good majority of the staff with him to West Point that's still there with him.
Yeah.
You think of some of the names that have donned the sidelines and the press box for Georgia Southern over the year. You think of a guy like Mitch Ware, in addition to Jeff Munkin. There's so many guys on that staff that have so many ties to Georgia Southern. And I think everybody talks about the mutual respect between teams. This may be the game that embodies mutual respect the most throughout this year, if you think about it. Because obviously with Army-West Point, the prestige of not only the academy, but the football team that Coach Munkin has built over the last couple of years, but also with Coach Munkin and all of the guys on his staff that know what Georgia Southern's about, know the history, know the tradition, know the mentality of Georgia Southern football, I don't know that you're going to see two teams that have more mutual respect for each other than this game.
The nice thing is the game may take 10 minutes.
That's an accurate point.
There may be five combined passes, which that joke has been made a lot, but we're going to make it again.
I don't know. You want to talk about some of those old Georgia Southern Citadel games? I know you have been a part of a lot of those that took about an hour and a half.
Yeah. Those were good, especially when you had to get home.
This one may break a record.
I think about the connections. Former Eagle assistant, two times over, Bob Bodine, spent a number of years with Coach Munkin up there. Brent Davis is still calling his offense. Sean Saturnio is still up there. If this happens, this is going to be a lot of fun. And I know a lot of people are really, really looking forward to this. And some were wondering, okay, in the announcement, there wasn't anything that said, okay, there's been no return date. This isn't appearing to be a home and home. Well, we don't know that that's not being worked out because of the situation that everybody is in right now. I mean, you saw what Troy did last week, inking with BYU. That became a home and home. Who's to say what's going to happen with this? But what could help is that Georgia State, ULM, Troy, they already have home and homes with Army. So I would say that that lends us to the situation that this could become a home and home, even though it was not announced last week. I think it was more important to fill that date because Army was in more need than Georgia Southern was. They operate as an independent, and they have a slew of dates that are open. I don't think they even have six games yet. So to get one filled and for Georgia Southern to fill that Ole Miss slot, that's more important to do now than to make sure that there is a game that may be played 5, 6, 7 years from now.
And we've talked about it on a couple of different ways of that was probably going to be the harder of the two open dates for Georgia Southern to fill.
For sure, that late in the season without a question.
Because with everybody going to a conference only or a conference plus one, plus two, whatever it might be, the one later in the season, the SEC was one of the only conferences that had open dates at the end of the season. Well, abracadabra, they're not doing any non-conference games. So that was going to be the more difficult one to fill. And everybody's talked about it over the last week, but good on Jared Benko for not only thinking about having independent, that connection, but being able to get it done. At the end of the day, Jared's talked about it all the time of there's a lot of people we're reaching out to. Whoever handles their phone is going to be really working, but at the end of the day, being able to get it done and get it done in a way that makes sense for both programs.
And I would also say good on the rest of the Sun Belt over the last week or so. Louisiana is yep. going to play Iowa State. Arkansas State is playing Kansas State. We've seen App State add three games. Remember, they were down to eight at one point, so they've added three non-conference games. They've gotten Charlotte, Campbell. They just announced yesterday they're going to Marshall this year. That should be a great game between former SoCon rivals.
Oof.
Seems like it's a lot longer ago.
Oof. Ooh, that's a blast from the past.
But everybody's tried to work within the confines of what their league has said, and we know with the Sun Belt, keep your eight league games. Play as many as you want to in the non-conference. If you've got them scheduled that you can still play, go ahead. And that's why, even though we also found out last week that the NCAA canceled all fall championships, not including FBS football, because they don't control the playoffs or the postseason in the FBS. That's something we covered last week. And every FCS football conference is now saying, we will not have conference play in the fall. We're looking to the spring, but the option was open for all those teams to play up to four non-league games, and that's why Campbell still stands on the 12th. They'll be coming to Paulson.
So September the 12th, as of now, is the official start date for Georgia Southern football in 2020. Again, we'll touch on it again, but September the 5th, is it still a possibility? Yes, but a lot like we were talking about on the recap that GS Eagles put out of the scrimmage, the later and later it gets, the more that chance dwindles. And really and truly, I think if you're able to have an 11-game season for Georgia Southern, I think that's probably a win. You look across sure. the country, you talked about Army only having six games or something like that on their schedule as of right now. And so being able to play 11 out of 12, I know there's no moral victories around here, but that's not too shabby.
And you've got to think about what makes sense if it, perchance September the 5th would become an option once again. You don't want to have to welcome another FCS school because that would involve having to pay for another school to come here, and that's something that Georgia Southern probably wouldn't want to do. You've already got Campbell the next week. Even though you can count two FCS games as part of your overall win total, and typically you'd only be able to count one of those toward trying to get towards bowl eligibility. But if you're thinking, okay, let's get a Power 5 opponent, all well and good, but the ACC is 10 plus 1. They're already filled. We know that the SEC is going conference only. Pac-12, Big 10, they're bye-bye. They're not playing. And the Big 12 is just about done. I think that Baylor was the only one that had to ink. I believe they're getting Louisiana Tech. So unless something really unforeseen would happen in a very quick amount of time, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense from a fiscal standpoint to go and get a team that would be a bye game for that team. And for Georgia Southern, okay, if somebody would want to say, hey, let's play on the 5th, but that's just a highly, highly unlikely option.
And now you're getting into the sense of, okay, you sit here on August the 18th, and you are a little over 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks from that kickoff. And if it's somebody that you haven't seen for a while,
or ever.
Right, or ever, and I know it sounds like, oh, you've got 2.5 weeks. 2.5 weeks is a little tight to
start of school. You're still in that camp mentality because camp's only been going on for just over a week. Typically, we'd be going into week three, maybe even week four, depending on when students would report. But with everything up in the air, with schedules having to shift to make everything work, at least in some way, I'd be safe in saying here, I can't guarantee it, but I'd be very safe in saying that September the 12th should be the date that Eagle Nation is shooting for. And I think a lot of them already are. It's a home game. It just feels better when you can open at home. It's a team you should beat in Campbell. We'll talk about them plenty more. They're out of the Big South Conference. They played the Pioneer League for a number of years, but this is going to be their third year competing in the Big South. They've got the preseason Big South Player of the Year on offense. I won't get too far ahead of it, but if you want to prepare your mind for a game like that, that's probably the way things are going to go.
You talked about camp going a little over a week now. This past Saturday, had the first scrimmage in fall camp, and boy, oh boy, did it sound good to open the windows of the press box and hear some pads popping. It was just phenomenal.
A little bit of experimentation with media protocols with, okay, where can people sit? Where can television stations shoot from? How much can you be on the field? Can you come to the press box? Those are still gradually being sorted out, but at least you got a taste of what it could be like for that September the 12th setting. I still think that it didn't feel like a usual first camp scrimmage because they're a little bit behind, just like about 130 other teams are in the country. But what we stressed in our report after Saturday's game, they hit each other like they haven't hit each other in 5 months.
Yeah.
That was a charged scrimmage between blue and white.
There were so many times where you and I were watching through binoculars from the press box, and we would be following the ball, and then both of us be like,
oh.
And then we're like, oh, my. Well,
number one, they're trying to make up for lost time, but two, you've got to be able to hit people.
Yeah,
we've got to be safe and responsible with all this, but once you get between the white lines, it's still 11 on 11. We've got to play football. Whatever else happens, happens.
We touched on some of the numbers in the post-game report that's on gseagles.com and on Twitter and Facebook as well. But you look at a guy like Jaylen White, who had the biggest rush of the day, 68-yard touchdown, had 100 yards on the scrimmage. Jordan Pearson, the redshirt freshman out of South Carolina, had a 33-yard rushing touchdown, 41 yards total. But a guy, and you and I have talked about this a lot, of Sam Kinnerson, freshman quarterback from Baton Rouge. A lot of people have heard about the freshman from the Bayou and what he brings. I know that he only had 11 rushing yards on 6 carries. He did have a 9-yard rush in that.
Couldn't touch him.
Right. The numbers may not blow you off the page from the scrimmage, but I will tell you one thing. I know Shy Wirtz is our quarterback for 2020,
mm-hmm.
but the Sun Belt might need to learn Sam Kinnerson's name pretty quick, because that guy, and I know it's a scrimmage, I know it's not a full game, but he comes in, commands the huddle, runs this offense, and I don't mean runs the plays. He ran the offense for Georgia Southern, and you think this is a guy that has had a week on the field. 1 week on the field. Yes, they've been doing the Zoom meetings and in-person meetings, the workouts, whatever. But that's not the same of being on the field, actually doing it.
All right, I'm going to make a claim, and I'm going to try to make this...
Do we need the breaking news noise?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
And I'm going to try to not get people too excited, but this is what it reminded me of when I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, watching Sam Kinnerson with the ball in his hands, and the way that he shifted around, change direction, his acceleration, and the way that he could just make people miss.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have nearly the size.
Yet.
Yet. It reminded me a lot of Jerick McKinnon.
No doubt. He is a much leaner
Jerick
McKinnon.
And remember, McKinnon wasn't yoked like he was his senior year in 2013, and now hopefully going to get back on track with the Niners this year. But the way that he changed directions left people wondering, what is this? How do I handle this? I need to put 4 walls around him just so he doesn't go anywhere. There's no doubt he's an athlete in the Shy Wirtz ilk. And granted, Jerick was a running back that ended up playing a lot of quarterback over the course of his 4 years in Statesboro. But I'm just telling you, the way that he moved around, it reminded me a lot of old number one.
No, and Sam Kinnerson and Matt Greenhall need to become best friends over the next year or so. And Matt Greenhall is, we've talked about this before, one of the best strength coaches in the Sun Belt and in the country. And if there's somebody that's going to bulk him up. But the biggest thing, and you and I and Terry and I have talked about it a couple of times, of how the way that Matt Greenhall and his strength staff, they're not just getting people in the weight room trying to get them as large as they can be. They are putting on the good muscle on them, making them bigger, yes, but they're making them bigger without losing their speed. That's one of the biggest things that has stood out to me, seeing the way that Matt and his staff really work.
The best example that I can tell you there is Wesley Kennedy.
Yep.
I think he's gotten faster.
No doubt.
And the physical transformation he has made the last 2 years plus has been phenomenal. I would hope that something like that with Sam could happen, but I'm just telling you, there could be something, depending on how much experience he's able to gain, and not knowing in any way, shape, or form how 2020 is going to go. We know that Shai Wirtz is the leader. We know Justin Tomlin is going to be the number two. With seven quarterbacks, there's certainly enough options, because you need them. Are they all going to see the field? Maybe. Probably not. Sure. You don't know. That's the one position in that offense where you've got to have a wealth of depth.
Yeah.
And this year, to have all those guys that I think could capably run this offense, it's good to see.
On the defensive side from the scrimmage, we talked about it again in the post-scrimmage wrap-up of Deontay Bembry, an interception of Justin Tomlin, one of the first drives of the game. I think it was the first drive for the second team.
Yes.
When Bembry picked off Tomlin. Also had, later on in the scrimmage, a pass breakup, one-on-one with Darion Anderson, and we talked about it after the game. Outside of it just being one-on-one with D1, which that should be a hashtag or a shirt or something. You're going up against one of Georgia Southern's top receivers. And I know Georgia Southern is not known for throwing the football, but going up against somebody that we've talked about it before, a four-star recruit coming in to Georgia Southern, and being able to look as good as Bembry did against D1, that was pretty impressive.
You've got to find a way to stand out right now with Brinson and Vildor now gone. There's competition with Bembry, with Canteen, with Daryl Baker moving back to cornerback, with Kitchen, with Birdsong, among others. There's plenty of guys that, number one, are simply looking to get on the field more, and two, trying to earn that starting nod. The only guy of that group that has started a game at Georgia Southern at corner is Justin Birdsong. He started the Coastal Carolina game at Paulson last year. Now, Daryl Baker has started before at safety and at nickelback. Remember, that's what he played in 2017. But regardless of what the look is against Campbell, it's going to be a different look.
You put it one of the most eye-popping ways a couple of weeks ago when you and I were talking about it, about how no matter what the combination of the two corners that Georgia Southern throws out in the first game, the most combined starts
at corner
is going to be one.
Correct. And even with the potential that Tyler Bride, Braylon Peterson, and Seth Robertson have shown so far, haven't played a game here.
One
that's
is the absolute most
what
number
is the
of
most
starts
at corner, just at corner. That's And considering how much Georgia Southern did have its issues defending the pass last year, that may make you lean back in your chair a little bit, but it is a new year. They're going to be doing things differently. I anticipate this being the most aggressive of Scott Sloan's three defenses, because when they were good last year, it was good when they were pressuring, different from 2018, which could get stops without necessarily needing pressure. But I do think that this is a group that, while it may not be tested, they've got talent. They just need the opportunity to show it.
No, and I think you see that, because talking to coaches and whatever around practice and over the last couple of months, you see that the fact that the most you're going to have is one combined start at cornerback. But they're not panicking.
No.
In years past, when you've had nobody returning at a certain position, there are coaches like, yeah, I don't really know how this is going to go. You might want to buckle up. But I don't get that vibe from Scott Sloan and his staff.
Going into 2019, you needed to replace both safeties. Josh Moon, Sean Freeman, both graduated. We knew Kendrick Duncan was going to be a starter. We didn't know who that other safety was going to be. It started out as Daryl Baker. Donald Rutledge eventually unseated him. So after that, you knew that you were going to have to find another safety. And at this moment, Javon Singletary has stepped in. Duncan, I still think, has enormous potential, having two more years to lead that secondary. But the experience of having to replace a full position group is not new. It's just different when you've got guys not only manning the outside, but also manning probably the best athletes on the other side of the football.
So that's the recap of scrimmage number one. There will be another scrimmage coming up this Saturday as well. We will have a post-scrimmage wrap-up on gseagles.com and on Twitter and Facebook, and also we'll get you everything up to date next Tuesday on the edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But before we send it to Roger, got some men's basketball news. Now, I love some of the, because you can't necessarily tweet out and publicize until a certain point of a commit coming to your school. So I love the like cryptic messages. You see the Chad Lunsford fist bump gif, Coach Berg putting out a cryptic message last week, but signing the last scholarship that Georgia Southern men's basketball had available. We've talked about all the different signees that they've had over the last couple of months since Brian Berg was brought to Statesboro. But this is one, and it got Frank Sulkowski pretty excited too. Fred Odhiambo, 6'11", I believe.
For the sake of this, we'll say 7 feet.
Sure, close enough.
He's a 7 foot.
Yeah, if you're 6'11", you may as well. It's one of those things, you get like an 89.9 in class, you just round up to a 90.
If you're 6'11", to me, you're 7 feet.
Yeah, sure. But I think Frank posted something on Twitter last week of he had the most dunks on Huddle in the last 2 years. And that, I'm a fan.
He's out of Hutchinson Community College in Kansas. He dunks everything. And you know, 7-footers don't come through Statesboro very often.
I guarantee if I was 7 foot, I'd be dunking everything too.
That is a good point. But you think about Tyshawn Crawford from a couple of years ago. He was the first 7-footer for Georgia Southern since Emmitt Smith back in the early 1990s. Yes, Georgia Southern did have a center named Emmitt Smith. But now with Odhiambo coming in and just providing more depth and being that true rim protector that Eagle basketball hasn't necessarily had. But given the style of basketball that they've played for roughly a decade, rim protecting hasn't necessarily been a necessity just because they played so fast, and really all across college basketball, there just aren't a whole lot of 7-footers anymore, because if you're going to play modern-day college hoops, you got to be able to run. You've got to be able to go up and down. There aren't very many that go half-court basketball, 60 points per game. It just isn't normal anymore. But he looks athletic on his film, and I sincerely hope that he finds a way into the rotation, which if everybody is as good as they're being billed, Coach Berg's going to have a heck of a time trying to figure out who he's going to play and how he's going to play him.
It's a decision I think he's pretty A-okay with.
He's fine with.
Who my best five is out of all these guys.
Oh, I have to sit somebody.
Yeah, hey, right.
I would rather do that instead of looking around thinking, okay, I have to play somebody.
But we will, and that's the last scholarship that Georgia Southern men's basketball had. So
correct.
You're going to have the tweets and the new faces kind of simmering down. You can get a roster and start to learn the names. We've talked about trying to learn some of the pronunciations. And
one thing that Mark Janak, our great sports information director, has done, he has updated the roster online for 2020. Odhiambo has not yet been put on, but go look, check out some numbers, read some bios, because as we mentioned, this is a much different team. But if you want to, go say hi to Elijah McCadden, say hi to David Vitti. They'll appreciate that.
Another familiar face we have here in Eagle Nation. People have seen it for, almost 100 years. But Roger Inman with this week's Eagle Tales.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
Now, Roger, we've talked about Paulson Stadium hosting national championship games in 89, 90, and 91, but something that made that 89 game even more special was the postgame concert performed by Lee Greenwood. What do you remember about that day?
Probably one of the best environments that you could ever want to be on. Good news, it was a win for Georgia Southern, but Lee, even more recently, with our political scheme of, if people want to get rid of the national anthem before ball games, if you were to do that, my immediate second choice would be God Bless the USA. Very, very patriotic song. Lee is obviously a very, very patriotic person. You know, listened to him recently in some of his interviews with several network carriers. He cares about this country probably more than anybody else would ever ask for people to care about our country.
Do you know how it came about that he would perform here?
I could, I would be interested who the one that invited Lee. I can't answer that question. Okay. I just know that he showed up. If I remember right, his bus driver tried to drive out on the field and tore up a sprinkler head. Which cost the bus driver $3,000. that day. But we repaired it. Not a small sprinkler head at Paulson Stadium. Very pricey sprinkler head.
Roger, that is one of your better ones. Now let's go to Colin Lacey with this week's Beyond the Bio.
Time now for Beyond the Bio with Colin Lacey.
Welcome back into this week's edition of Beyond the Bio here on Inside Eagle Nation as we step into the Creative Services Office with the new GA for Creative Video, Maurice Moses. Mo, appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Now, you just graduated from Mississippi State. What's the transition to Statesboro kind of been like for you?
The transition has been pretty easy. Everyone here has been pretty welcoming and accepting, and everybody's ready to work, so I'm excited to get to it.
What's kind of the biggest thing that drew you to come into Georgia Southern and Statesboro?
The biggest thing that drew me here was the family atmosphere. Also, my mom went here, and my cousin Stacy Moses played football here, so it was a no-brainer, honestly.
Now, you come from Mississippi State, like we talked about. Jared coming over from Mississippi State. What was your relationship with him, and how has it kind of grown since you got here to Statesboro?
I honestly only knew of Jared at State. Jared probably didn't know me. I was just a little measly intern. But my boss, he asked if they had a video person that could come and that was graduating, and I was available, and my boss plugged me in. And since I've been here, I've gotten to know him a little better. We speak in the hallway.
Give us a little bit of your backstory. What kind of drew you into athletics and specifically the video side of it? What kind of made that part of what you wanted to do?
I started off doing video in church. I was standing up in the front recording the pastor preaching the sermon. And then in high school, me and my friend started a club sort of thing where we would make hype videos and stuff for the sports teams. And when I got to State, my orientation leader was just asking us if we had any hobbies. And I was like, yeah, I like to take pictures and videos. And he was like, oh, yeah, I know exactly who you need to email. You need to email Derek Cody. So it just instantly plugged me in. And so I was working on the sideline in an SEC football game before I even knew how to get to the dining hall. But I stayed there for 4 years. I got to experience some pretty cool things. Final Four, SEC soccer tournament, NCAA tournament at Duty Noble Field. Got to meet some great people and learn from some amazing people as well. So it was an awesome experience.
You talk about some of the experiences. In 2017, you got to cover the women's basketball Final Four. What was that experience like?
That experience was unreal. Arike Ogunbowale ruined my hopes and dreams, but it was definitely a great experience. Getting to video Victoria Vivian's, Tierra McCowan, Blair Schaefer, the whole team, Vic Schaefer, and just to get to see things that most people don't get to see. Mariah Taylor, everybody. Like, I got to sit in the room where the ESPN people interview the players and the coaches before the game. It was just unreal. I got to ride on the team bus. I got to go to the team party with, it was Mississippi State, Baylor, UConn, and Notre Dame. I think that was the four teams, but it was just really cool to get to see the other players as well. And I have tons of memories still saved on my computer, so it was a great experience.
You talk about how many people have kind of poured into you over your time working in athletics. Who are some of the biggest influences that you have that have kind of taken the time to help mold you into what you are today?
It was mainly four. It was Derek Cody, who is now the director of video production at Orlando City Soccer Club, and Nicole Ryder, who is now the assistant director at the University of Florida, Danny Malikoff, who is still at State, and Drew Walker, who is still at State. They all have pushed me to my limits, taught me so many things about the business, about being creative, and they let me explore and they let me run wild in terms of creativity, and it was just a great experience that I couldn't have asked for better mentorship.
Now, you spent 4 years there at Hale State Productions. What's kind of the biggest thing that you take from there now going further into your career? What's the biggest thing you take away?
The biggest thing I've taken from them is just working hard. Simply coming to work and putting in the effort will take you far. It doesn't matter how expensive the equipment is. It doesn't matter how many people are on the team. If you show up to work, put in the work, you will see the results. It doesn't matter if everyone sees the vision. As long as you have passion and have goals, you'll be able to take care of business.
You got a pretty unique experience starting in about 2019. You started with East Mississippi Community College over in Scoob. Everybody knows them from Last Chance U. Everybody's heard of Coach Buddy Stevens. Where did that experience and where did that opportunity kind of come about, and what was that like?
It's an hour from Scoob to Starkville, but my old boss, Derek Cody, who worked at State, who's now at Orlando City Soccer Club, he, before he went to State, he worked at East Mississippi Community College. When he went to State, him and my old boss, Drew Walker, got to work on Last Chance U. They were cinematographers for a lot of the games. There's a shot of one of their running backs flipping over a defender into the end zone. That's Derek's shot. But so Derek got to shoot some really cool stuff. And so Derek Cody's ex-wife still works there, and they were looking for a cinematographer to work for some of the games. So me and one of my buddies who does computer technology for Capital One now, they contracted us to come shoot the games. It was a great experience. We got to go in the locker room. We got to hang around with Buddy a little bit. He's a cool guy. He's not as bad as the show makes it look, but it was just cool. I also got to work with the women's basketball team. They won the state championship in Mississippi, so that was a great experience. I've never got to shoot a team winning a championship game. Shout out to Arike Agumbawale, but it was a great experience. I got to make some cool videos, again, make some more connections. Great experience. And
all right, being so immersed in the video side of things, for you looking at, and I know talking to different people around the industry, that everybody looks at everybody else's videos and says, I like this, I don't like this. What to you makes a good video for athletics?
A good video for athletics is something that can connect the fans to the players, whether that be through showing their personalities, showing their skills, to be able to tell the story of the student athletes, tell the story of a department, tell the story of the coaches. That's what helps create that authenticity and connect the fans with the athletic department. Doesn't matter about the effects. It doesn't matter about how flashy the video can be. If you can create an emotional relationship between the fans and the players without them even having to necessarily have met, and you make the fans feel like they've actually met these players and you've done a good job.
All right, this segment's called Beyond the Bio. Give us something that people see in you through your videos, seeing you on the field. People may not know something beyond your bio.
Something that people may not know about me is that I like smoothies. I like to make smoothies. I make one for breakfast every morning. I just got done drinking one. My favorite is peach mango.
Now, is this, you throw the fruit in or is it a pre-made type deal?
I throw the fruit fresh in. I add my coconut milk, a variety of other things as well to enhance the flavor, but I'm a big smoothie guy.
Mo, appreciate your time. Appreciate everything you do for Georgia Southern Athletics. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Once again, that is Maurice Moses. You may know him as Mo, one of the top video guys. And being able to see some of the videos that he's put out, and I know he just graduated a couple of months ago from Mississippi State, but it's pretty impressive some of the stuff he's putting out.
I was wondering if you were going to talk to him, because at football practice, we see him wearing a mask that has the Washington Nationals W.
Yeah.
And I thought that
would be I haven't noticed.
Yeah, I thought that'd be tough for you.
It was. But, you know, today when we talked to him, he had a Maryland flag. So we started talking about Rachel's connections to Maryland.
I should have done the interview.
You should have. Sorry. I didn't know it. But he's from just north of D.C. in Maryland.
Always nice to have another terrapin in the Peach State.
And he may have taken over my new Beyond the Bio. Because really and truly, whenever we ask Beyond the Bio, sometimes it's, got to think for a minute. I don't know. And a lot of people go with food. But Mo talking about how, and this was, nothing was cut out of him trying to think of what it was. I asked him the question, and he was ready to roll, that he likes smoothies and likes to make smoothies. Said he just finished one. Likes to put the fresh fruit and coconut milk in and just go to town.
I do like me a smoothie.
Yeah, you're a big smoothie guy.
I am. I'm going to stop off and get one on the way home.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a smoothie guy. I don't get it.
It's just like a milkshake. And I know you like you a milkshake.
Oh, yeah.
Because we've shared some good times with milkshakes.
Especially in San Marcos when we're driving us and the entire baseball coaching staff in a small cube.
That is a good story. We're going to hold on to that one. That's a really good story.
Oh, boy, oh, boy.
But, yeah, we got to...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Smoothies never really have been my thing. I don't get it.
What don't you get?
It just doesn't. And a lot of it is because most of them have like chunks of fruit in them. I like smooth. I don't like chunky.
They do protein chocolate smoothies.
Well, I realize. I don't know.
And you can put peanut butter and nuts and bananas.
Well, I like peanut butter.
Yeah. See, I'm trying to help you.
I know, you're trying.
You could make it a milkshake and not have to think about the smoothie, because I just think the word smoothie puts you in the wrong frame of mind. But if, let's say someone handed you a smoothie and said it was a milkshake. Would you be able to tell that quickly, do you think?
Probably.
And that would just throw you for a loop.
I mean, it would kind of throw me for a loop that they lied to me. What is it with us getting on random tangents?
We need to find a smoothie for you.
Okay.
We need to find a milkshake-like smoothie that you would enjoy.
A milkshake-like smoothie.
An actual smoothie.
Uh-huh.
But as far as you know, it could just be a milkshake.
Sure.
We'll get there.
All right.
We'll
keep you posted. Yeah. But for now, with everything going on, we've talked about the impact that COVID-19 has had on football, with things getting shifted around and all kinds of muddled. But it also affects all the fall sports for Georgia Southern Athletics as well, men's and women's soccer, volleyball, a couple of others as well. And so one of the things that we're going to start over the next couple of weeks, going to be doing a season preview of all of the different fall sports. Obviously, we'll get to football, but we're going to start today with Josh Moffitt with women's soccer in his first official year as full-time head coach. Took over as interim just prior to the 2019 season. Catch up with John Murphy next week. Get Coach Willis in on as well. But just need to talk about something other than football for...
Well, technically, you are talking about football.
That's true. That's very true.
This is the FUTBOL football.
Correct.
Football. Talking football.
Do you have to tweak your mouth that way to be able to say that? I wish people could see the way that you just contorted your mouth to say that.
I've had a really good stretch of voices.
Well, I'd hope so. You're the voice.
No, but other voices.
Oh, okay.
But you can't say that without football.
I love it. We're going to send a picture out of what Danny's face looks like when he says football. But we take a look at Georgia Southern women's soccer. So we start our fall sports previews. We sit down with Georgia Southern women's soccer and head coach Josh Moffitt. And the biggest thing that everybody's talked about over the last couple of months is adapting to the coronavirus and what the new normal is with COVID-19. For women's soccer, what does that look like for you guys?
Yeah, so COVID happened. It was in the middle of our spring season, which for me, the spring season was going to be very much focused on us, focused on the development as a team, but also focused on the individuals and focused on developing our culture. So when that happened, it kind of obviously broke that up. But for us, we want to meet adversity face on and attack it in any way that we can. And one way that we continued that development piece was through virtual meetings using Zoom to kind of break down our game model and our philosophy, because when we took over, it was a very short amount of time to kind of be working with the team. We were thrown in straight into the season where we had 3 or 4 months to work with the team. And then you don't really have that opportunity to truly break down who we are, because it's just constantly going into the next game where we're preparing for the opposition. So the spring was going to be all about who we are and where we're going and the way that I see the game being played and the way that the coaching staff see the game being played. So we did a lot of presentations. We actually set our team some assignments where they'd look back at previous games. We film every training session, so they're looking back at training and also some of the games that we played this spring, so that they could truly see as an individual how they can grow and develop, but also how that individual fits into our team and our philosophy.
When you look at, on paper, the impact that COVID has had, you guys have lost 7 games on your schedule as of now, whether it be because of the Sunbelt Conference saying that competition can't start until September 3rd, or a couple of different conferences and schools that have postponed or canceled the fall sports. What's the mindset going into knowing that you don't have 7 games that you originally had on your schedule, and how do you look to counteract that?
Yeah, so I think the Sunbelt as a whole and our athletic department have been fantastic in moving forward through this. Like, it is uncharted waters right now, but for me, the preparation and the progress that we've made has been fantastic. So we're currently working on adding some games to our non-conference schedule, but as myself, the coaching staff and the team, we talk about, it's, you can win those 7 games non-conference, go 7-0 in non-conference, but you don't get a championship, you don't get a playoff opportunity to go and play in the playoffs. So for us, it's all about the preparation heading in to the conference and opening up with Coastal Carolina on the 17th.
The last calendar year has kind of been a whirlwind for you, taking over as the interim head coach right before the season a year ago, and then right before the Sun Belt Conference Championships being named the full-time head coach. What's the past year kind of been like, and how have you kind of attacked this year a little bit differently?
Yeah, so I think obviously, like you said, when we took over, it was a bit of a whirlwind being announced the interim head coach one day before preseason. The way that I've always been brought up, it's about preparing, being organized, being ready to go, and that's what we were. So although it may not sound like it, but we transitioned very smoothly into that head coach position, and we kind of led the program the way that we believed it should be led, which I think kind of allowed for the success, if you like, on paper, where we did kind of maybe exceed expectations going to the conference playoffs and having more wins than the previous season. But one thing that we talk about is, like, our expectations are high. So finishing in a playoff spot for us isn't good enough. Like, we want to be challenging for the championship. We want to be challenging for the opportunity to go to the national tournament, which is what we're building right now. Like, I think the coaching staff and the support staff are creating a fantastic environment, but also the way our student athletes are leading the culture and pushing each other and holding each other accountable. I'm very excited for the future.
What's the biggest stamp that you've tried to put on this program over the last year since you've been either the interim or the full-time head coach?
So again, kind of just going back to that, it's just creating an environment where our student athletes can excel and they can develop. Again, one of our core values that the student athletes came up with was having a championship mindset. And again, from a soccer's perspective, that is winning championships and competing for those championships. But we also talk about the kind of championship mindset in the classroom, the championship mindset when we are serving the community, and a championship mindset in our social life. So that, for me, holding ourselves accountable in that sense and being professional in everything that we do. And on the field, we want to be competing from the first whistle to the last whistle and being intense in everything that we do, but also playing intelligently. So kind of recognizing scenarios that are happening and transitioning from training into games, for me, is important.
Now, you look at the roster for this year, you got 11 girls that were on the team last year no longer here, six of those being starters. What's the biggest thing that you take from that group that has left this program now and kind of left their mark on it?
Yeah, so again, coming in as an interim head coach, we did have a big senior class, and the way that they kind of responded and bought in probably allowed me to be in the position I am today, being the head coach. But yes, we did lose them, but they did leave a mark on the program, and we're continuing to move forward. The leadership that we've got right now, albeit only two seniors, but we do have Marcella Montoya, who's a graduate student, and then we have some older players who have played at some fantastic levels of the game, whether that be transfer students or internationally. So that the leadership's still there, and we've constantly been working on that piece, whether that's through individual meetings, through our leadership council, or just as team meetings as a whole, and creating that player-led environment and the player-led culture, I think, is truly allowing us to make progress a lot faster than many would expect.
Obviously, with losing that many girls from last year, you've got to replace those, adding 13 newcomers to the roster this year, 11 of those being freshmen. What excites you most about this incoming class of what they're able to do for Georgia Southern?
Yeah, I think having that year as the interim head coach, it allowed us to truly analyze our team and what we needed to be successful, but also looking at the conference and seeing who we're competing against and the strengths of those teams at the top and how they are achieving that. So we've brought in, for me, some very special players who bring a little bit different to what maybe we had last year, and that could be through work ethic and the energy that they bring, the character of them as a person. And then we've got players who are coming in who are, like, for me, probably one of the most athletic players, or some of the most athletic players in the conference right now, with Simone Tim, who's coming from Canada, and then we add Karen Winker, who's returning as a sophomore, who she only played a handful of games for us, so we're excited to have her. And then, again, this class is a special class for me because it's my first ever full recruitment class, and I'm excited to kind of see where we'll go with them, and they've definitely shown very well in training so far.
We're going to dive into your recruiting process a little bit later, but when you look at some of the names that you're adding to this roster, it's not just you're looking for an outstanding soccer player. You're looking for a great person, especially academics, I know is big to you as well. And bringing in a high school academic All-American, I know that's something you're really proud of.
Yeah, Maya was a student athlete that was speaking early on in the process, and we're very excited. And I spoke to a lot of her coaches, which the way that we like to recruit is, yes, it's about our kind of opinion and getting to know them and building relationships, and whether that's through visits on the phone or nowadays through Zoom. But we also want to do our work as well behind the scenes and getting to know their coaches and seeing how they interact in there. We'll often get out to a lot of training sessions so that we can see how they perform there, because we know every athlete wants to play in the games, but how do they respond in training? What's their work rate like in training? How do they respond with their teammates? And Maya's been fantastic since she's got here day one. You wouldn't know she was a freshman, the way that she's kind of helping her teammates and pushing her teammates to get better every day, but she's also willing to learn herself, and she's also like always coming to coaches asking about this, that and the other. And again, she's going to be a fantastic asset to our program.
When you talk about recruiting, you were talking with Jared on one of the Tuesday talks a couple of weeks ago on Facebook Live about how you're really putting an emphasis on the talent that the state of Georgia has. 10 girls on your roster from the state of Georgia for 2020. How much of an impact does that have, being able to have in-state talent here at Georgia Southern?
Yeah, for me, that was maybe one of the biggest surprises when I took over the program and I did look into the roster and what we had, to notice that we only had 4 players from the state. And being one of 5 Division I programs here, for me, I truly want to build a core of the team with in-state players. And as you said, we went from 4 to 10 this year, and next year we've got 7 committed for 2021. So it's not necessarily just that they're from Georgia, like, again, that's massive, but it's the character piece, it's the play inside of it. Like, they're fantastic players, but they're also fantastic people, and the families that they're coming from and the background. And I believe the culture side of it, that a lot of our recruits have either played with each other in high school or at club, or played against each other in high school and club as well. So that culture piece is going to be there, and we know the backgrounds that they have, the training environments that they're coming from. So we're very excited to be representing Georgia Southern with in-state players too. So,
as you get closer and closer to starting the 2020 season, what's some of the biggest things that you and the staff really look for, both individually from the players and as this team as a whole for 2020?
Yeah, so one, we talk about the adversity, because it is an adverse moment right now with things coming, but just appreciating every day, which is another core value that our student athletes had. It's appreciate the moment, and every opportunity that we get to play, we're going to take that, or every opportunity that we get together, we're going to embrace that. So we're looking forward to kind of going into every day, whether that's training or into a game, and we just want to get better. Like, that's one thing that we talk about, is get better every day, outperform yesterday. So we're excited for that. But again, it's a new team, it's a new season, and we're excited to see how successful we can be.
Finally, before we let you go, you started preseason training a couple of weeks ago. Who are some of the individuals that have stood out to you and kind of really taken that next step to make Georgia Southern women's soccer that much better?
It's difficult to kind of pick individuals just because of the way that the team are performing right now. But I think if we look at our leadership, Maddie Clintworth and Brogan, who are 2 seniors right now, like, they kind of recognize this is their last season to play, and the work rate that they're putting in has been outstanding. And then we've got our leadership council of Nora Falnes, who's going to be a junior, and then Chris Sparing and Danny Combs, who are both rising sophomores. They've been absolutely fantastic too. So that's more of off the field, where, again, I don't think you can be successful on the field without the leadership within the team, off the field, and kind of holding each other accountable and pushing each other and staying on the same page and all kind of striving for that one goal. We did play on Saturday, and I think if you look at kind of statistically, Deborah Ruiz, who's a freshman, she scored 3 on the day, and then Simone Tim, another freshman, scored 2. So it's exciting to see the freshmen are starting to find the back of the net also.
Coach, appreciate the time. Appreciate everything you and this program do for Georgia Southern Athletics, and good luck this year.
Thank you very much.
Once again, that's Georgia Southern women's soccer head coach Josh Moffitt, one of the best people to just sit down and have a conversation with. And we've talked about this a lot. There's a lot of people around Georgia Southern Athletics that you can just sit down and have a conversation, whether it's about their sport or not, about whatever. John Murphy next week's going to be one of those.
Oh,
Chad
yeah.
Willis is going to be one of those. We've had many conversations just sitting and chatting with all of those guys.
And with the Tuesday talks that have been done by Jared Benko for a few months now, Coach Moffitt's was really good. It was one of the longer ones, but it was one of the better ones.
And I like the way that Moffitt kind of
approaches everything. He's just got, he's laid back, kind of relaxed guy, but he is all about doing things the right way and making sure that everybody in his program is on board with that.
And he won 2 gold medals at this year's Battle of the Eagle Stars.
That he did. That he did. So, I would say this is our time for our random ramble.
We've already done that.
But we've already done that with the smoothies. Should we have a Twitter question go out of what our next random ramble should be? That should be, could be a segment. The random ramble.
The random ramble. Who would we put on that? That's really what Eagle Tales is.
Well, yeah, that's true.
But it depends on who it is.
Yeah. But the random ramble doesn't have anything to do with
that could
anything.
Be the chamber segment, if we could ever figure that out. Ryan's random ramble.
Ooh, I don't know that we have that kind of time. Because I've heard a lot of those random rambles.
And Eagle Nation, for those of you listening, you probably have heard a lot of those random rambles. But in the 5 years since he hasn't been in Statesboro, I'm sure that some of those random rambles have gotten more random and rambly.
There you go. That'll wrap up this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. If you have any ideas for a random ramble, just send them to us. We'll randomly ramble about them. If there's any people that can just sit and randomly talk about anything, I'm pretty sure it's you and I.
We've done that almost 100 times.
Right, but...
We're coming up on 100.
And I guess that's kind of all the conversations that happen in the car between here and wherever we're going for games. I think our car conversations could be a podcast in and of itself.
And twice we did make those a podcast. Well, but if it was a more regular thing, then...
Right.
It's got some legs.
We may not be able to use our real names or keep Georgia Southern affiliation.
Names and situations have been changed to protect the principals involved in this.
Exactly. It's like Mary Pat. But that'll do it for this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. Make sure to catch up with us next week on all the platforms across the Georgia Southern Sports Network. You've got Apple, TuneIn, going on the Gata Rewards app starting this week as well, so you'll get notifications a couple of times throughout the day when Georgia Southern podcasts will go out. But until next week, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.